Turn with me, please, to Genesis again, the book of Genesis, and we are going to read a few scattered verses. And Genesis chapter 8 will be the first reading. And verse 1, and God remembered Noah and every living thing and all cattle that was with him in the ark. And God made a wind to pass over the earth, and the waters assuaged. The fountains also of the deep and the windows of heaven were stopped, and the rain from heaven was restrained. And the waters returned from off the earth continually, and after the end of 150 days the waters were abated. And the ark rested in the seventh month, in the 17th day of the month, upon the mountains of Ararat. And the waters decreased continually until the 10th month. In the 10th month of the first day of the month were the tops of the mountains seen. And it came to pass at the end of 40 days that Noah opened the window of the ark which he had made. And he sent forth a raven which went forth to and fro until the waters were dried up from off the earth. Also he sent forth a dove from him to see if the waters were abated from the face of the ground. But the dove found no rest for the sole of her foot, and she returned unto him into the ark. For the waters were on the face of the whole earth. Then he put forth his hand and took her and pulled her in unto him into the ark. And he stayed yet another 7 days, and again he went, sent forth the dove out of the ark, and the dove came into him in the evening, and lo, in her mouth was an olive leaf plucked off. So Noah knew that the waters were abated from off the earth. Verse 15, and God spake unto Noah, saying, go forth of the ark, thou and thy wife, and thy sons' wives with thee. Bring forth with thee every living thing that is with thee, of all flesh, both the fowl and the cattle, and every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth, and so forth. And verse number 20, and Noah builded, at the end of that they went forth out of the ark, and Noah builded an altar unto the Lord, and took of every clean beast and of every clean fowl, and offered burnt offerings on the altar. The Lord smelled a sweet savour. And the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more every thing living, as I have done, while the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. And God blessed Noah and his sons, and said to them, be fruitful, and so forth. Verse 4, but the flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. And drop down, please, to the fact, verse 18, I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And verse number 18, and the sons of Noah that went forth of the ark were Shem and Ham and Japheth. And Ham is the father of Canaan. These are the three sons of Noah. And of them was the whole earth overspread. And Noah began to be an husbandman and so forth. Verse number 28. Noah lived after the flood 350 years. And all the days of Noah were 950 years. And he died. Now these are the generations of the sons of Noah. And you have Japheth and Ham and Shem mentioned. You have also verse number 9. Verse 6, the sons of Ham, Cush, and Mizraim, and Put, and Canaan. And you have all these other names. Verse number 8, and Cush begat Nimrod, and he began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, whereof it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel, and so forth. Now verse number 21, then on to Shem, you have got the different ones connected to him. Verse 25, and unto Eber were born two sons, the name of one was Peleg, For in his days was the earth divided, and his brother's name was Joktan. Verse 32, these are the families of the sons of Noah after their generation, in their nations, and by these were the nations divided in the earth after the flood. And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech. Verse 4, and they said, go to and let us build us a city and a tower whose top may reach unto heaven, and so forth. Verse 5, and the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men builded. And verse 7, go to, let us go down, and there confound their language. Verse 9, therefore, is the name of it called Babel, because the Lord did there confound the language of all the earth. Now, we'll just drop down, I think, to verse 16. And Eber lived 430 years and begat Peleg. And Eber lived after he begat Peleg 430 years and begat sons and daughters. And then you have the posterity mentioned till you come to verse 26. And Terah lived 70 years and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now, I think that's all we'll read, and I trust with the Lord's blessing upon it. It is very obvious that in the chart, and you've seen it and you've known it, that you have what you would call, and I just, you have from creation to the fall, and that's in number one. And of course, from the fall to the flood is number two, and then from the flood to Abraham, and you've got from Abraham, the flood to Noah coming in the government, and then you have Abraham to the law, and then you have the law to Pentecost, and then you have Pentecost to the rapture, you have the rapture to the millennial kingdom, and then you have the millennium kingdom into eternity. That really gives you what you call a very panoramic and very concise capsule form of, I have to keep in front of this, of these different cycles, different periods, different stewardships, different administrations, if you want, all in these particular periods that we're touching. We're now in this one here, and we're going to look at it, the Noahic covenant, and of course we have the Edenic covenant, and we come into those different covenants. Now we're going to look at what you call under government. It is noticeable. And you know it, and I'm repeating, but it is obvious that failure in every one of these areas that we've touched already, right on, we'll find failure, 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 until God's man, who's Christ, the second man, the last Adam, until he comes and brings everything into headship, for all things will be headed up in one man, in God's purpose. He's head over all things, to the church, which is his body, according to the Ephesian letter. And so thank God that when we're looking at these different epochs in the program of God, that we learn this, that really they're all pictures, and they're just forming little finger posts, and they're giving us little pictures of what's going to take place when it'll be finally brought into full bloom and full blaze. And God will be all in all. Wonderful to live in this dispensation, number 6, where we can reflect back and pick out through the Bible these different periods in God's program. It is obvious that in each of these places, like if we went to this one again, which I'm not going to be, but it's definite that there are definite characters that are prominent. The character of Adam, Eve, Satan, and God. When you come to this one, of course, you'll find that Abel is the prominent one, but then you have also Enoch, and then you have Noah. So there's different, in the different periods, there are different men or different characters that are outstanding that gives us at least a little insight into what God has in his plan and purpose. And of course, in this one here, in the government, here, we're going to look at Noah. We're going to look at Nimrod, particularly, and see that those are the two main characters. That will lead us on to the next one, which will be Abraham. But when you get to that one tomorrow night in the... I'm throwing out the bait just. When you get to that one tomorrow night, you'll find you have characters like Abraham, and then you have Isaac, and then you have Jacob, and you've got Joseph. And those really cover that period as prominent characters in that particular period. And from them, we will learn precious lessons until you get into the law in the next one, and you'll find Moses is the prominent one, the lawgiver. But the Moses period leads right on over 1600 years, and you'll find other prominent characters, because we're going to be in a period when he's going to touch not only is he going to touch on Moses, the lawgiver or the prophet, he's going to touch on priests, and he's going to touch on kings. And so that will lead us on until you'll get to the period of grace, when there's one man, one person, one character, supreme, unparalleled, majestic, glorious, central. I haven't got enough words. Anyway, he's going to be absolutely preeminent, not prominent. These are prominent men. But God is only one preeminent man. And that will be Christ. We'll see that in the day of grace. And then when we go to the next one, again, we're going to find us leading on, because the Christ is the head of the church in the day of grace. In the day of the millennial kingdom of righteousness, he's the king. And when he finishes that, he's going to hand everything over to God, when the Trinity will be in operation in the new heavens and the new earth, and God will be all in all. Glad you're saved? Yeah. Happy you're saved and going to heaven? I hope we're not like the person, you know, when he went along the road and the man was giving out tracts, and the man, here's it. Well, the man says, no thanks, I have enough trouble on my own. So we want to carry with us a flavour. We want to be a wee bit like Moody when the beggar says, man, you with the look of heaven upon your face, would you give a poor man a penny? We want to carry a flavour down the mall. We want to carry a flavour where we go, that people at least will say, we thought there was something different about you. Not odd. We don't need odd fellas. We need God fellas. And so we're going to look at this dispensation. The world has been overthrown with a flood. The world that then was, according to Peter's epistle, we looked at that last night, the world that then was overflowed with a flood. All humankind destroyed. Apart from one little family who were preserved in an ark. And that ark, no doubt, listen, that ark, all those are symbols, or all those are pictures. That ark is a picture of Christ, no doubt about it. The gopher wood in all its purity, that wood of, that white wood, speaks of the absolute perfections of Christ. Pitched within and without, tells us of the man that suffered at Calvary under the dark darkness and depths of suffering upon the cross to provide salvation. And that door in the side speaks of one door and only one to heaven. And that invitation, come, thou and all thy house into the ark, can be carried right through until we hear the last carrying call of the book of the Revelation. Have any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. See, friend, the Bible's interwoven, so precious, so clear. It's not haphazard. It's not a jigsaw puzzle. It's set out line by line, book by book, verse by verse, letter by letter. It's a precious book. No wonder the old gentleman said he couldn't read and write when he got saved. Now, I smile at people and say, it's over your head. If you ask them how a computer works, they can tell you the ins and outs until you're baffled. And they've only grade 5 education or 6. and they're whiz bangs at a computer. Have you talked to them about cars? They could tell you the ins and outs. They may lost. And you talk about the feast of Jehovah, and you talk about the offerings, and you talk about these things, and say, over our head. Are you reading your Bible? This precious volume. The old gentleman couldn't read or write, and God saved him. Because God, it doesn't matter whether you can read or write, that does. And God comes in grace, he can save the whosoever. That's one of the things that I'm going to find, one of the joys of heaven. Like, the greatest joy will be with Christ. There's no doubt that surpasses all. But one of the joys of heaven, to look around and, who? He made it. Imagine. He couldn't read and write, and there he is praising and singing. And yeah. And that Frenchman made it. Imagine the Frenchman. And that Irishman. Oh, that fighting Irishman. And that Italian. And that Chinese. And they're all together. And there's not one complaint. And they're all saying, we used to sing in our unsaved days, he's a jolly good fellow, but I know that's going beyond it, but I think we'll say we're all happy up there. The joy, the appreciation, and I'm going to get in a wee moment just from my subject a certain word that I want to emphasize in the dispensation of government. Well, you know, dear old fella, God saved him. He started to read and he taught himself, self-taught. Use the Bible, great textbook. Mr. Willie Wark, a preacher of the gospel, knew him. He was saved in his area. And he knew old John, or John he called him. But Willie Wark left for the United States of America and was over there for 20 or 30 years before he went back home again. Mr. Wark come from the country side where my mother come from. And when he went back home, dear John was on his deathbed. Wasn't going to make it. Life was coming to a close. Wonder how we'll finish. May God give us grace to finish well. And Willie went in to see him. And when he went in to see him, he looked in the bed, the poor, frail little form of once a strong, robust farmer. He had a Bible over his chest like this. Well, he says, John, what are you doing with a Bible over your chest? Well, he said, I can't read it anymore. I'm just loving it. I like that. Oh, I hope, at least in the meetings, I hope it produces within us a keener, more devoted exercise for this book. Joshua was told to meditate upon it day and night. The Lord was the perfect pattern. We never reached that when he said, Psalm number 1, the blessed man whose meditation is in the law of the Lord day and night. A tree planted by the rivers of water. When I look over my life of 52 years, I can tell you some great failures. Number one, I didn't devote enough time to the reading of the book. And number two, I didn't devote enough time on my knees. We can get through life in a form, but that's not joy. The joy will always spring from my communion with Christ and the appreciation of that book. The old Puritans used to say, if you read some of the writing, some of them would almost put you to sleep, but they're that voluminous. But the old Puritan used to say, in a nook with the book. And William Wilberforce, who never knew anything about the assembly, or if, I don't know if he was baptized or not, I couldn't tell you. But William Wilberforce, God saved him. Amazing how God saved him. He was like a pygmy, small, deformed. The same when he got up in the House of Commons, he was like a giant. He spoke. He took a little trip for a little vacation with another man. And they were going to this place for a little, just a little rest, a little vacation from the laborious work of the House of Commons. But somebody put in his hand a book. Now, I might be wrong in the title. It was a book, I take it was Philip Doddridge. I have it in my, it's an old book, you can't get it now. The Rise and Progress of the Soul. Anyway, he was reading this. And when the man was lying in his bed, and Wilberforce in his bed, that man lay on, and Wilberforce got up. This is where I have to move now. And he started to walk back and forward in the little room. He says, "Oh God of mercy. Oh God of mercy. Oh God of mercy." God awakened him. Wilberforce could see it. When he rose in the House of Commons, they listened. You know what he did? When he left his house, there were no cars in those days. You would never heard the name Toyota. You might have heard the name GM, I don't know. I don't know. You know what he did? He quoted. When he stepped out of his room, headed down to the House of Commons, he quoted the whole of Psalm 119. Could you quote it? Don't ask me, please. I think we play church sometimes. We really don't get the Bible into our hearts. Oh, you say, well, I have only grade 3 education. Well, I'm not going to tell you my education. I haven't very much it. May God help us in the meetings. This is to ministry now a wee bit, to get this point in a minute. Let us learn the lessons from these epochs in God's program, these cycles, these periods, these administrations, these stewardships, the importance of the Word of God. Listen, let me say this to you all. A person that's wrong in dispensations will be wrong in an awful lot of other things. Sad to say, and I mention this very carefully, men that I couldn't lace their shoes, men that were so gigantic in their preaching and so mighty and so much used with thousands swept into the kingdom, who could have touched a Spurgeon or a Whitfield or a Wesley? In fact, David Gilliland and I were preaching in Ireland together about 3 or 4 years ago, and we're preaching in Chapman's Barn, they call it. We fix it up for a hall, and people come there. And he was preaching one night, David Gilliland. I found it hard to follow him. I thought I maybe should have just sat down. But when he was preaching, he just stopped a moment. He said, "What are we doing here? Not a ruffle. Not a ripple. Not a crying out. Not a calling." And then he stopped. He said, "You know," he pointed with his finger a certain direction. He said, 3 miles from this building, 3 miles, there stood a man with an open Bible. For 2 hours, and 10,000 people gathered. And amid the 10,000, you could have heard sobs. And now and again, you'd have heard a cry of mercy. Oh God. And in that large audience, in one preach for 2 hours, at least 200 people got God's salvation. And here we are, 5 weeks. Boy, how could I preach after that? But we have to keep on preaching. Don't get me wrong. Keep on. Keep on. Keep on. Keep on. Don't give up, but keep on. But it really speaks to my heart volumes. Wife and I had a little chat now and again, you know. A little talk about reminiscing. Not because we're gray ahead, but a little reminiscing. And I come to the conclusion, and mind you, I put her in the higher bracket than I am. And this is on this. Well, she gets it, it's okay. Spiritually, yes. And we look over 45 years. How few. That's all the preaching. However, if just one gets saved, worth a lifetime. One soul saved from hell, saved for heaven. And even in these meetings that we're having, even if a boy or girl gets saved in these meetings, you're not saved, my friend, it would be wonderful. We would count it, indeed, for all eternity, a worthwhile effort to come and preach the gospel of God's grace. One soul, friend. Rutherford put it, if one soul from Anworth meets me at God's right hand, my heaven will be two heavens in Emmanuel's land. The only thing you get encouragement now and again, I got an email the other day, is to have to write back. I did write back. And the chap way out in Alberta, away out in Sussex, away out in that, in the States. And he said, dear brother Albert, you know, he said, I got saved at your meeting so many years ago. He didn't know that. Give me a little bit. Are you saved? You mean to say you're not saved? And you can look at this and see the end? May God visit in power. We're coming to this, what we have before us, and we want to look at it very briefly. We're going to look at this is a new beginning. This is a new order. Humankind have been destroyed. Devastation of the flood. One family survives, comes through in the ark that speaks of Christ. And then they come after the flood and everything is settled. That large boat, patterned by God, built by Noah and his others, whoever helped him, is probably his sons, in 120 years. It lands in Mount... Listen, Mount Ararat is the mountains of Ararat. They're not just sure exactly. It's a range of mountains. Could be in Turkey. Some have thought that. I seen a film that showed you that they were investigating and exploring and exploring. But they come to the conclusion they weren't sure. I wouldn't worry about it. I'm trying to investigate it, but I mean, people try to do that. You know, we don't need a piece of wood from the ark to prove the inspiration of the Bible. No. If it happens, wonderful. God's going to start a new order, and Noah is going to be the head. Adam was the head here, threw it to the ground, Satan came into the picture, man fell, brought the whole human family into devastation and sin before God under condemnation. God says, I'll start a new order, a new head, Noah. Now what I want to get is this. Noah was already saved. There's no doubt about that in the day of conscience, in the period of conscience. And what I want to point out just very briefly before I touch a few other things is this. When Noah came out on that new earth with his family, one of the things we will learn, the evidence of God's salvation, what is it? The evidence of being in God's family, the evidence of being a recipient of divine grace, what will it be? Now, I know you know it. If I ask you right now, you know what it is, don't you? Worship. When Noah came out on the dry land, and come out of that ark, the first thing established was an altar. And on that altar there were placed burnt offerings, because you don't get sin offerings until the law comes in. In the fifth period. And so, one of the things we're going to learn, that what God does in salvation is exhibited and evidenced in our worship. I hear it said sometimes, well, you can get saved and like, well, you just live any way you want. You ever hear that? You wouldn't hear that. But I've heard it said, you know, just saved and, you know, you can do whatever you like. Salvation stands 100% on the value of the death of Christ. And that ark's a picture of Christ, the place of refuge. They entered in, they were saved. But friend, the evidence. You remember what John tells us in John 4 about the woman at the well? The Father seeketh worshippers. The highest form of service in our universe, whether in heaven or on earth, is worship. Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God. It's established. The Father seeketh such to worship him. Now I'm going to say something here. There's a wee bit of I want to call this sidetrack. Just a moment. We don't call the morning meeting the worship meeting. Now don't get me wrong. I'm going to the worship meeting this morning. I'm going to remember the Lord Jesus this morning. I'm going to partake of the Lord's Supper this morning. Worship is not confined to any calling. It's individual as well as collective. The moment I like when Mr. Robert Love, he was a quaint old preacher now, and you'd have to hear him, and maybe you wouldn't make him out because he used such Irish language and his dialect, he was from the country. And I remember him one time saying, I remember this conversion saying one time about somebody trying to push him into salvation, you know. And he went to this meeting, and this man went over and spoke to a man and said, what's wrong with you? Well, he said, I'd like to be saved. Well, he said, here's what it says. He that believed in the Son hath everlasting life. Do you believe? Yeah, I do. Well, you're saved. So he headed over to Mr. Love, who was sitting, and the man came over to him. He said, well, now, what's wrong with you, sir? Well, he said, like to be saved. Well, you would like to be saved. Well, listen to this. He that believeth on the Son hath him. Do you believe? He says, I do believe. He said, you're saved. No, I'm not saved. He was a wise man. He said, I'm using his own quaint words, Mr. Love said, some preachers make it so muddled. It's like looking, maybe you don't understand this. This is why I'm telling you, but you don't understand it. It's like looking for a snowball in a coal hole. If you don't know what that means, I'll tell you afterwards. You know when you put the coal? You would never find a snowball in there. And this is what he said. When God saved me,
in an open field. I took off my hat
and I entered into the presence of God and worshipped. I like that.
No entitlement. He hadn't it explained to him or exposited to him, but he knew this, the Spirit of God within. The moment a person can see it, is it not? Even in a short sentence.
Thank God that Christ died for me. I love him. Worship.
Normally stepped out. Evidence very clearly that worship is the first evidence
and the first response to God's mighty grace.
Plus the fact he lays down another principle, because in those offerings, those sacrifices that you're going to find throughout these periods that we're going to touch more when we get into the law and also into the day of promise, we're going to find this, that God has always given us picture after picture after picture that blood must be shed. Offerings must be made. Sacrifices must be made. Not anything that man can do, but that which is God's pattern, God's way. And all those sacrifices were just finger posts pointing to the one supreme, mighty, never to be repeated sacrifice of Christ. And so in the day of government under Noah, God blessed Noah. But you know, sad to say, just before he get any further, Noah failed. It's a sad thing that under Adam, headship failed. Under Noah, headship failed. See, these men were great men. God and grace reached them. But there's only one man that's going to head up all things. That's Christ. Failure marks humankind right through. The best of men are only men at the best. The one man supreme, perfect, holy, untarnished and untainted by sin, he has the moral right and the redemptive right to be head forever. We'll see that when we get to number 6. So we've got Noah and the ark. We've got Noah and the altar. I don't want to dwell in the sad reflection. That's not for the meeting tonight. Noah and the vineyard. Now there's nothing wrong with him being a husband. The wrong was what he did. And you don't have to be told, you dear folks here, that when you get wine on its own, generally speaking, it has a bad connotation. But when you get bread and wine together, it's usually blessing. You can trace that for your own observation, meditation. You remember, we'll see it in Abraham, Melchizedek brought him bread and wine. You remember in the future day that we're going to see in number 7, they're going to put their spears in their plowshares. They're going to put their spears and going to make them pruning hooks, the wine, and the plowshares, the bread, to produce food. Two things together. And of course, Lord's Day morning, got the two things together, bread and wine. But Noah, you know what happened? I'm not going to dwell on it. The sad reflection and sin, the sin of Ham through Canaan, was the one that was to vaulted in the action that took place. And the sad reflection that headship and Noah failed. There was one thing about in Noah's time and in the dispensation of government, God did give a covenant. He did what covenant needs of them. And the covenant is this, the bow and the cloud. It would never again, the world would be overflowing with a flood.
That was definite. That was clear. That's to this day. Every time you listen, every time you see a bull, remember it's going right back to here. God keeps his promise. I want you to get this point. In the day of government, just as in the day of conscience, a spiral downwards. We see that continually when we look at this. And you'll find that Noah, there's a spiral downwards. The three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, are the divisions of the nations from which all the nations sprang. In the days of Peleg, that's when God divided the nations, put them in different places. But there's a man comes into the picture in this day here. You know, when God, listen, I hope you understand this. When God sets up anything for his glory, the devil always sets something up in opposition. The devil is crafty to set up something, maybe a little like, maybe appealing. Always tries to set up something to take away from God's pattern, God's ways, God's truth. And so we find there's a man called Nimrod in the day of government. And that man, Nimrod, I'm going to change the translation here. Allow me to do that. You can look, I don't know what it is in the French. I must ask you that. Nobody has a French Bible here, have you? With you. You can look it up. Nimrod, a mighty hunter. Before the Lord, well, that could be, and I could stand all right. But I think another translation gives it maybe a little better against the Lord. Here's a man that's going to come on the scene, and he did in Noah's time. Nimrod, he was the commencement of the system of Babel. He was the engineer behind the setting up of the tower, the city. That which would reach the heaven in his thinking. And they built that mighty structure. Nimrod was the beginning of it. You know, that's a picture, isn't it? In that day, that's a picture. Taking us on down to the future day. When one day there will be a man, and the word's looking for him now. I need to be a prophet, but the word's looking for definitely for a man. I don't know whether I need to be very careful here, but the man that's there now, and I say this carefully and thoughtfully, I pray for him. I pray for Obama. I pray for Harper. If I asked you how many has prayed for Saddam Hussein, I don't know how many would say yes in this meeting when he was living. You say, oh, that rascal. Ooh. What about Nebuchadnezzar? Whom he slew, he slew, and whom he kept alive, he kept alive. What did Daniel do? Caught a big fish when he got Nebuchadnezzar.
Pray for good kings, good presidents, good prime ministers. No, pray for kings, all that are in authority.
This man, Nimrod, comes in, the mighty hunter against the Lord. He's against all that God would set up for his honor, for his glory, for the blessing of humankind. And of course he sets up and he makes this massive building. God's watching, just as he watched in day two cycle. Every imagination of the heart of man over only evil continually. He's looking down and he sees. A united, unified humankind with a leader whose name is Nimrod to build something that would be
against God, replacing God.
So we find that God comes down and confused their language. And that's why we have all the different nations scattered here and there of different languages. Very clear from Genesis that we've read in chapter 9 and 10 and so forth. Friend, God
confused their language. Now I want to bring in a point here. Here you're sitting in this meeting.
I hope we have stressed from 1, 2 and 3.
One way to heaven. Only one person that can see. The value of the precious blood is absolutely emancipating and atoning.
Anyone that adds to that work
destroys the efficacy and the wonder of it.
No matter what religion. That's why we have religions everywhere. I'm not speaking against the people. I'm speaking against the systems that have arisen that detract from the absolute uniqueness of the one sacrifice and the one way to heaven.
And they're set up a thousand ways in their own psychological, intellectual thinking.
I believe that's where we are today. That's one of the things in North America. It's awful hard to, you know, I've seen the time. In fact, I'm going back to when I come to Nova Scotia. And I don't think I could count in my one hand the people that kicked me out. If I went today, I could count in one hand the people that kicked me in. I went up the valley way back in those days and into homes and down on my knees and I prayed with them and gave them tracts and talked to them and with 30 and 40 and 50 of them come out to the valley and I went to one door and the man says, "Get out or I'll shoot you." I said, "Okay, gentlemen." He was wrathy. Oh, he was wrathy. I said, "All right, sir, okay. I went to the next house. A dear lady, an older lady, grey-haired, said, "Come on in." I said, "Thank you." "So would you like a cup of tea?" I said, "Boy, wouldn't I love one." I said, "Was it that house down there?" "Oh," she says, "don't worry about him, he's a radical." But anyway, he was well known. But you could go around now and just, those are not interested. No, we have enough religion. Huh? There's no God anymore. Oh, my minister. My priest. No, we don't want to. Constant. The world that we are living in is saturated, North America, with a definite antagonism against the blessed gospel of God's amazing grace. As it was in the days of Noah. And coming to the end, we have that solemn reality of Nimrod the mighty hunter, Babel rising, Noah's failure. That's why God is moving in progression in every dispensation, in every period. And God's purposes, you know, I sometimes stop a moment and say, look, it doesn't look hopeless at times, even in our day. I hope we don't get that downbeat. God's program is going to go on. There's no power can hinder it. Demons, the devil, or men can't hinder the progress of God's divine purposes and plans and schemes that will be finalized
when God will have absolute preeminence. Listen, let me say, but as I close, you know, when we get a hold of this in our minds, we get a, sometimes, people will say to me, I don't want to say to you or not, they'll say, "God's very hard. He's very austere. Why didn't he step in and save that situation of those people getting murdered?
And why didn't he step in and stop that awful, awful drug addiction that's taking young people into eternity?" Well, friend, listen. Learn this lesson. I forgot to tell you it, but I'm telling you it now. From innocence to conscience to government, there's a principle that abides. You get it into your mind. Sowing and reaping. What Adam sowed, he reaped. What Cain sowed, he reaped. What Nimrod sowed, he reaped. Unless we forget, we Christians, same principle. What we sow, we reap. We can't, some people say to me, why this, why that? I tell them all the time, I say, look, I have no answer for you. Really, I can't give you an answer. The secret things belong to the Lord. Shall not the judge of the earth do that which is right? Absolutely. But I'll tell you this, I do know this. There's a principle that works in every individual, in every home, in every village, in every town, in every city, in every country, and worldwide. Sowing. You see the meltdown that we have now, the financial crisis and all these things? Come on. I wouldn't need to be a scholar or a Harvard University's man to know that if you sow to corruption, which they have, you're going to reap it. That's a principle. It mightn't catch up with your present, but it always will down the road. So let us learn the lesson that God expects us to receive the only salvation, the only Saviour, typified or pictured in these different periods. But you have the choice. You're going to make a choice in this meeting. And these meetings. What do you choose? Whether you're going to choose, yeah, I'm a sinner, I'm guilty, I'm lost, I deserve, the Bible says it, and Lord, the only answer is Christ tonight. And that you'll come to Christ by faith. Or else you can say, well, look, I'm just not going to get saved now. Going to wait till another day. You've made a choice. What if this was your last day? What if in that air the shout was given and we are gone and you're left? You might cry. You might cry. Oh, give me one more chance. Give me one more chance and I choose. Too late. Don't miss that. That burdens my heart. Weighs heavy. People, you see people that don't even come to this hall tonight? They know meetings are going on. They're making choices. I'm glad I got it settled 52 years ago. And I'm glad within my heart, maybe very small, worship ascends to Christ and to God. May God bless us. Where shall we pray?